Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. Now, I've done over 200 Talk Magics, and I'm very excited to be speaking to this next person. I'm a huge fan of theirs, but I don't really know much about them. So it's going to be very, very interesting for me as well. This is somebody who has literally, in the last year or two, taken the magic world by storm. He has brought out incredible release after incredible release after incredible release. And I know he's got multiple projects with multiple companies coming out in the next couple of years. To say this person is on fire is an understatement, and I'm super excited to talk to him and find out all about his creative process and all about what he's done and where he's going. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Mr. Liam Levenon. How are you doing, Liam? You okay, mate?
Hey, what an introduction, man. I don't know. I can't stand for it, but I'll try.
Well, it's true. You are everywhere. Like, there's already people that are saying that 2024, like, dark horse for Trick of the Year is Inverto.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Seriously, everything you're bringing out is fire. It's just brilliance.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, it's a fun thing to come up with tricks and to have people excited about them and to get messages from people saying, like, I love it so much and I use it all the time. You know, just that for me is everything that I can ask for, that people actually perform these things, you know, and the thing that, just something I came up with in my living room is being performed all over the world. It's pretty crazy. But honestly, you know, I'm talking to you, you're like a machine of creating tricks after tricks. And, you know, you've been so prolific. And I love your channel. I mean, I've been watching it for a long time. I love you. I love Ryland, mostly Ryland.
It's very fair.
No, I'm joking. But, you know, I love the channel. I love what you do. And yeah, thank you for having me here.
You're more than welcome.
Looking forward.
I've had so many people say to me, Craig, when are you going to interview Liam? So, you know, the time is now. And what I said is true. I don't really know much about you outside of the fact that you're very, very creative. So we're gonna delve into this in this interview, and we're gonna find out a little bit more about you as a performer. And I want to start, Liam, at the very, very beginning. So let me ask you a question: when did you get into magic? What was your origin story?
All right. So basically, when I was a kid, I had a social problem. That I had too many friends. I was a social butterfly. And, you know, I was just, everyone loved me and my parents wanted to dial it down a little bit, you know? So they got me into magic, you know, just, it was pretty much the opposite. You didn't know if I was serious there.
I was like, is he joking? That's great.
No, you know, I was just pretty young that I found out about magic. I was like 8, and I was like in a circus afternoon program that I learned like juggling a little bit and stuff like that. And someone introduced magic, and I remember like falling in love with it. And I did it for a few years, just, you know, from everything I could find around the house and some books we have. And at a certain point, YouTube started kicking in. So I'm 28 now. So when I was 8, it was 20 years ago. And I think when I was around 12 or 13, something like that, YouTube really started. And there was a lot of tutorials suddenly, you know, free card tricks, tutorials and stuff like that. And for me, that was like a, you know, it was like a gold mine of something that I can suddenly learn and, you know, actual tricks. So I just spent hours playing with my deck in my room, you know. but you know, just I fell in love with it, and and I joined. We have I'm from Israel, so we have in Israel we have like a society of magicians. And when I was about 14, I think I joined the youth program for the society. So you need to do like auditions, and then you can join the society. And I've been there ever since. It's still running very strong. Nowadays, I'm actually the vice president of the same society. So it's kind of funny. But, you know, just getting into the community helped me, like learning more. And I started performing, really doing shows probably at around the age of 15, 16, something like that. Then had a little break during the army, because in Israel, I don't know if you know it or not, but it's mandatory to serve in the army for 3 years. So when I was in the army, I didn't perform too much. And after the army, I started working professionally. And that is what I do today. So I am 100% professional magician. Like, that's my job. But I also create a lot of magic. And I love coming up with ideas for tricks, and also consulting and helping my friends, and, you know, doing all of that. That's pretty much it.
That's amazing. We're going to delve deeper into some of this stuff. So when you were doing it as a kid, and you're in the youth program, was your aspiration to become a professional magician? Did you go out and do gigs when you were like a kid, or was it really kind of more when you came back from the army?
No. So when I was like 17, 18, I started doing some gigs, but very, you know, local gigs, some within my family, some just family friends, stuff like that. I had no ambitions to become a full-time professional. And only after the army, I started thinking of really considering it. And during COVID is when I made the final decision that that's what I want to do. Like, because when COVID started, maybe a year after I finished the army, and there was no shows anymore. There's nothing to do. So I took that time to get a degree. I did a BA in it's called visual culture. It's like art history and art theory, stuff like that. I just did that because, you know, I didn't have a lot to do. So apart from a few Zoom shows, I mostly did that. And I finished just when COVID finished here. And since then, I've been just performing 100%.
That's amazing. So when you went off with the army for 3 years, you said you didn't perform that much. I can totally understand why you wouldn't have time to do that.
I did do tricks for my friends, and, you know, yeah, I always carry a deck of cards with me wherever I go, but I didn't perform professionally. Yeah.
So when you were during that 3 years, you say you came back and you became a full-time professional magician. Was that always the goal? Was it always, you know what, when I finished, I'm going to... No. What happened? What made you kind of finish the army after 3 years and go, you know what, I'm going to go pro? What kind of pushed you in that direction?
So for a while, it wasn't the goal. I did gigs just to fuel my hobby, basically. Like, I did gigs because I wanted to keep doing magic, and I always liked performing. I always loved performing, but doing it as a job requires some additional things that I didn't know how to do, you know, in the business side of things. And that also didn't interest me at all. Like, when I just finished the army, I didn't want to do any of that. I was 23 years old. I wanted just to, you know, just to have fun and do magic. So I also did some other things in the meanwhile. I always had like a second job, being a cook, being a barista, I also worked with a magic company called Cobra Magic for a few years. I don't know if you know them from Israel.
Are they still around? I remember Cobra.
Yeah, still.
A lot of electronic equipment from memory. Yeah, a lot of electronic.
So I also worked there for like 2 years. And during those times, I always did maybe 2 or 3 gigs a month, not more than that. And that was pretty much the only... I also performed, you know, in my free time to friends, to people on the street, to everyone I could find. But as a career, really, I only started focusing on it 100% just after COVID.
Okay. So that what made you decide to kind of go after COVID? What made you decide to go, you know what, I'm going to go for this full time? What changed between sort of before COVID and during COVID to make you go, you know what, I can make this work?
Well, I guess I realized that, you know, my degree was pretty fun, but to make a living out of it is not really anything that I'm interested in, neither in the research field or being like a teacher or something like that. Never really spoke to me. But when I realized that I can, when I perform professionally, it basically allows me to do this all the time. You know, it basically allows me to create all the time, to have fun with tricks, to talk with people like you, you know, to just delve into that situation. And it allows me to be 100% in that, rather than being like 60% into work and then 40% into magic, eventually going to almost none. And I also grew more and more interested in the whole marketing thing and the whole business kind of things. Like I started doing some online marketing and, you know, some Google AdWords and stuff like that, and started getting really interested in that. So eventually I kind of grew into that part also. And now I find interesting not only the shows, but also getting better with like sales calls and rebooking clients and stuff like that, which I have to say on the Netflix, you have some really good stuff regarding that. I remember watching a few courses around that whole topic that I really liked. So I highly recommend it. If you guys are not there, you should.
Thank you, Liam. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. So when you talk, anybody who's watched your tricks, and we'll talk about your creativity, we'll talk about that in detail in a minute, but anybody who's watched you perform, you primarily, or at least it comes across on the releases, that you primarily perform close-up. Is that the case? Do you do stage magic? Do you do kids magic? Do you do anything else? Okay. Or is it close-up that you just do?
So really, close-up has always been my number one thing. I always loved close-up. It's where I originated from. Card tricks and, you know, flourishes and stuff like that, something that I always loved, as a kid. It was the first thing that I ever learned. But nowadays, just because of the demand in the Israeli market, at least, I mostly do stage shows. The close-up, I try to push that as much as I can into the shows. Like I do drink receptions and I do walk around and I do stuff like that. But mostly it's all around the stage show, because it's more important to the client. It's more like the bigger thing. While close-up is only being like a little fun before or after the show. But really, the things that I come up with are mostly close-up. I think it's just because, you know, it's what I love performing, and it what I come up with the most. Even though I have a few things in the chamber, you know, that are, do you say that? In the pipeline? I don't know,
yeah.
What's the term.
Yeah, pipeline, yeah.
Yeah. I have a few things in the tube that are more stage oriented. I also, when in the stage show, I do mostly mentalism. There's not much magic in the stage show, which we can also talk about, because it's an interesting topic, the whole thing with mentalism in Israel. You know, it's very interesting. But yeah, the tricks that I come up with are mostly close up, because I love close up magic. I love card magic. And I try to think about things that are both practical and kind of weird and special, you know, not like the common trick that you just want to improve it, which is also great. But I always try to think like, what weird can I do with that? You know,
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And you mentioned mentalism. I'd love to talk about mentalism in Israel, but also the other thing that we can talk about when it comes to mentalism is it's that topic that everybody always debates, doesn't it? should you mix magic and mentalism? Like, you are a magician and a mentalist. You know, I mean, you say that your show is primarily mentalism, but you obviously also perform magic. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, should you mix them together? You know, if somebody is seeing you doing a mentalism show, but they saw you doing close-up and it was magic, does that devalue the mentalism? You know, as somebody who does magic and mentalism, what's your take on that? And also, tell us more about mentalism in Israel.
So, in my opinion, first of all, you're an entertainer. So that's the first thing. And if you're a good entertainer or a decent entertainer, you should always be able to find out the correct things to do in the environment that you work in. So sometimes when you do, if you're, let's say you're like me and you do mostly mentalism, but you also love doing magic. Sometimes at the event, the right thing to do would be to take a deck of cards and to blow their minds away with some hardcore card magic. You know, sometimes if you take the deck out and you start performing magic, then they will think, wait, maybe is it all sleight of hand? Is it all tricks? Then it kind of damages the mentalism, you know, because you don't want them, when you do mentalism, you don't want them to think about sleight of hand. You don't want them to think about any technique, really. It's all about, you know, the psychology, the body language and stuff like that. But really the focus is on the entertainment, because you just want to find the best tool for that moment that they'll have as much fun as possible. And sometimes for me, it will be mentalism and sometimes it will be magic. If I do close up before my show and I know that everyone's going to watch the show, then usually the first sets that I do are going to be more mentalism, because I want to form that base that they know that I'm a mentalist. And that gives credibility for the show. And then after the show is done and they're already blown away, they're already like, they saw the mentalism, they're like, wow, how can that be? Now, if you do magic, the magic becomes a little different. It's not a puzzle. It's not like, let's see if you can catch me. It's more like he can do weird, crazy things. You know, it's hard to explain really, but a trick like in Verdo, for example, when you do it in the right circumstance, it doesn't feel like sleight of hand. It feels like an oddity. It feels like something, you shifted things and in a way they shouldn't be, you know, especially with their name on the card. So just for example, or things with a memorized deck, if you do some, you know, Tamariz stuff with mnemonicosis or stuff like that. But it's not mentalism, really. But it kind of finds a similar path, you know. But most of the times, I won't go out and do, like, sponge balls and stuff that is, like, obviously magic, you know. I try to do a mixture of magic and mentalism.
That's great. That's really good advice. That's great. And you said that mentalism in Israel is an interesting topic. How come?
Well, it's an interesting story, because I don't know if you met a lot of performers from Israel, but most, like, I would say around 90% of the performers in Israel that are actually working performers, maybe 80% of them, do a mentalism show.
Hmm.
Mentalism is very popular in Israel, at the moment at least. And that is because of the history here. So when you think about it, Uri Geller was the first one to popularize mentalism in Israel. And that was, I believe, in the 80s, I think. I might be wrong, but I think it was around that time, before he moved to England. So he really popularized mentalism here. And when he started, you know, people were talking about the spoons bending on the television and the watches stopping. And that gave the whole mentalism thing really high awareness. Like, people were talking about it. And after Uri Geller, there are a few more mentalists, including my good friend Leo Manol, which actually took mentalism to the corporate environment. And he was the first one to actually make, like, all of the high-tech companies. And there's a very big high-tech industry in Israel. So all of the high-tech companies want to hire mentally is to perform at their trade shows, at the corporate events, stuff like that. Because so it became a really like when you want to see in a conference or in a grown ups event, when you want to see entertainment that is magical, you immediately think about mentalism. The connotation doesn't go to magic. In Israel, magic is more. It is more when somebody said even the word magician, the automatic kind of association is a kid entertainer, kid magician. That's really? the word magician. Yeah. When you tell a client, and I was struggling with that for a while because at the beginning I wasn't really as much interested in mentalism. If I talk like, I don't know, 5 years ago, I wasn't as interested in mentalism. And when I tried to sell my show and I told them like, I do a magic show, yeah, and people were like put off by it a little bit because it's like, do a magic show, it's for kids, right? So there are a few working magicians, a few of my good friends who do a magic show for adults and they make a living out of it. And they're great. They're really good. And most of them are also very funny. They're very comical. So it's like stand-up magic, sort of. But for the most part, if you want to be a working professional magician in Israel, most people move towards mentalism. And I think it's like a little bit of a cycle because you start by doing more mentalism because that's what the market is kind of looking for. But for me, the more I do it, the more interested I become in mentalism, you know? And the more interested I become in mentalism, I create more things that are mentalism oriented and I learn more about the history of it and becomes more and more fascinating to the point that nowadays my show is mostly mentalism. So yeah, it's kind of that thing. And nowadays, of course, we have people like Lior Sushad, who is a world-known mentalist, probably the most successful one if we're looking in terms of like appearances and stuff, TV appearances. We also have people like Nimrod Arel, Amir Lustig, who are more local but are also very, very, very successful. And yeah, a lot of mentalism in Israel.
So here's a question for you, because that's fascinating. A lot of the time, in the old days, I say the old days, in a few years ago, everybody who went into mentalism was kind of like a Max Maven clone. It was like Max Maven 2.0. And for the last few years, at least over here in the UK, a lot of people that are mentalists, they're basically Derren Brown, if you ordered him.
Derren Brown.
Yeah, it's kind of like they go down the whole route of, I'm going to influence you, this is psychology and blah, 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 blah. Now, so two questions. One, as a mentalist, how can you stand out? Because with magic, there's lots of different ways of performing magic and presenting magic, lots of different characters, but all mentalists seem to be doing the same thing. It's like pretty much identical. Everyone does the same thing. So how do you stand out as a performer and do something different as a mentalist, especially living in a country where there's so many mentalists? And second of all, as a follow-up question, what do you think is the next big thing in mentalism? So it was Max Maven, then it was kind of Derren Brown style. Where do you think mentalism is going to be going in the future?
Those both are really good questions. I think in terms of how to stand out, really, it's hard for me to say because I don't feel that I personally have reached that point yet. Mm-hmm. I think I need a few more years to find my way to really have an original voice. Even though, you know, it's a work in progress. And I do think that when the show starts, people feel your personality and they feel the energy that you bring to the table. And just that alone can be enough to make you unique. You know, it doesn't always have to be around what are the tricks that you do or what is the style of performance that you have. It is true that people are also here. People are very, very inspired and affected by the famous mentalists because same for Britain, you have Derren Brown. So here you have like Lior Sushad, which is who is the biggest name in that industry. So even if you are very different to him, when people come to see a mentalism show, they immediately do the comparison in their head because that is what they're familiar with. Yeah, so you don't have a choice. And for me, trying to stand out, the things that I do, the approach that I have, is I try to, first of all, I kind of get away from the standards, you know, because at least here you have the standards that everyone does, the tricks that everyone does, like the magic square, like PK touches, which are great, amazing effects, yeah. But I feel that if I do them, I must bring my unique approach to them. Otherwise, it's just too similar and people will compare it. And people will see my show and then see someone else's show and they'll say, they pretty much do the same thing, you know? Unlike when you do bigger things, like if you do, which I don't, but let's say you do a question and answer act or you do a blindfold act or something that is like very, very, it's a massive part of the show, then it's easier to bring your personality into that because you have more room to fill. It's not like, I think you can you understand what I mean? Like you have more, there's more space for personality there. But in the things that I do that are more like, eventually I do a name reveal, you know, I do which is a standard, you know, something that everybody does, but I try to bring my own personality, my own jokes, my own kind of the way I feel about mentalism and about magic. And I try to not take it too seriously. And I try to, you know, show them that it's not anything unnatural and that it's all fun and it's all and it's all about the experience. It's all about what they feel at the moment. They don't need to learn anything about the world. They don't need to take any lessons about human behavior from me. Just here to have some fun. So that is like my approach. But as I said before, I don't think that I already found my own unique voice, at least not in the stage show. I feel that when I do close-up, it becomes more unique because, first of all, I do more original things. Like I do more of my own creations because I created more to close-up. But also, I feel I only started doing my stage show maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah, and close-up I've been doing for more than 15 years. So I have more experience with that and I feel more comfortable and I feel more like myself there, like unlike on stage, which I'm still working on. Does that answer the first question or not?
No,
really?
That's a great, yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly what I was looking for, yeah, definitely. And the way you think...
The second question...
Yeah, where you think...
What was it again?
Where do you think mentalism is going in the future? What's the next big evolution of mentalism?
In my opinion, and that is only what I hope, I don't know if it will happen or not, but I think mentalism, I think that a lot of the electronic stuff will get exposed. And I think a lot of the electronic stuff is gonna bring down the popularity of it a little bit. Because we're moving towards, you know, things get more and more exposed on social media. And it's not far from the day that everything that is technology-based is going to be out there in the real world, you know, and people are going to just know that is what that is. So I think people are going to move more to the back to the basics.
Yeah.
The mechanical ways, the old methods that you can find in 13 Steps or in Hahnemann. You know, mental magic and all of that. And I think that it's moving back. Personally, I'm also working on a project that has to do with that right now. So I'm also excited about that in that way, which I would love to tell you about if you want. But I think it's going to move more into the back to the mystical area, more of like a spiritual connection to the dead, that kind of thing, you know, very extremely mystical, like to be over the top mystical, you know?
I had a I was having a conversation with somebody about this very subject, and I said to them, a lot of the methods that a lot of the electronical methods that mentalists are using, you're seeing similar products for the general public now. Like I saw a set of Bluetooth dice that keep track of the rolls for when you're playing a board game. I saw just a normal pad where you write down with a pen and it translates it onto a onto an iPad, you know, for just keeping track of your notes and everything. And it's like, yeah, it even if they're different, it's not a giant leap once they become public domain that people will put two and two together if they're not careful.
Well, yeah, it's primarily all about whether they trust you or not, whether they believe in you or not. Even nowadays, and I do use electronics in my show, just to be clear, yeah? But, you know, somebody occasionally will say something about, I bet this is Bluetooth or, you know, something like that. And what I do is I just joke about it. I like say, oh, yeah, it's actually satellite. If you can move over there and stand just underneath the ray so I can get it in my, so I just joke about it. You know, I just make it seem ridiculous. Like if my pencil could have been Bluetooth, you know, but what you're saying is true, and it will happen eventually. And I don't think careers will fall because of that, but people will probably change a little bit their attitude towards methods and the things they choose to do. Because if you want to do the electronical gimmicks make it very approachable and very easy. Yeah. It's not, it makes the whole thing a lot easier. And a lot of people that do mentalism are shy of techniques, you know, and learning how to do a bill switch, learning how to do a convincing center tier and things like that, which I think if you haven't got those basics, then it's bad, because if the other methods fail and technology always fail eventually, then you need to have something to stand on. And that is why I'm also very thankful about all the years that I spent learning close-up magic and card magic and coin magic and techniques that are very difficult. And I can do a lot of the techniques that are very difficult, because now when I approach an idea in mentalism, I don't need to necessarily come up with a crazy gimmick. Sometimes a simple switch or a technique that I can come up with will do the same job as a very expensive gimmick, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you are right. I think we're going to go back to those traditional methods 100%. Okay.
Which are great. A lot of people made entire careers, you know, just from the one ahead principle and a few picks here and there. That's it. That's all you need. You don't need anything.
I completely agree with you, 100%. Which brings us kind of onto the subject of creativity. Now, when did you, we've talked about you becoming a professional performer. We've talked about you learning magic, performing during your army days, so on and so forth. When did you decide that you wanted to be a creator? Or when did you realize that you could create? And initially, was it creating just for you? Or did you have a desire from the very beginning to create and release magic? Because like you said at the very beginning, it's a nice feeling releasing something and knowing that there's somebody in another part of the world that you might not ever visit that's performing something and really having an impact on a person, but performing something that you came up with in your living room. It's an amazing feeling. It really is.
Like, yeah.
Was that your desire, like when you started creating, or was it really, I'm going to create to myself and then that happened later on? And where did you realize that this was a route that you wanted to go down?
I just love sharing magic with people. I love going to conventions. I love showing people my ideas. I love seeing other people's ideas. I love learning tricks and explaining them. That's the reason I do it. That's the reason I'm into magic at all. The thing that keeps me, I just can't stop thinking about magic. Everything I do is magic. All of my walls are filled with ideas and with like That's all and I know that you're pretty much the same. Like, I can't stop working on tricks. And when I have an idea, I need to figure it out. I'll stay up until 5 a.m. writing down ideas and finding tricks and methods and cutting things. I love working with my hands and kind of messing around with different gimmicks and builds. And I think that everything around, you know, the performance, the business side of things and everything is just to support that addiction, you know? Everything else that I do is to just to fuel that, because otherwise I'll probably be homeless. So really, to answer your question, I started creating really young. I remember being 14 years old, already sending ideas to like Theory 11, Dan and Dave. You know, that was my dream to just, I think it also has to do with the fact that I learned so much from YouTube, that I always wanted to be the one teaching, you know, to be the one explaining the tricks. So yeah, just doing that nowadays, when I actually get to release products with companies, and that's my, you know, it's the dream. It's what I want to do. I like sharing the ideas. I like to see people using them. I also worked as a consultant for a few projects, with some Israeli guys mostly. And I just love giving the input and seeing them using the tricks. It doesn't have to be me. Not everything that I do is for my own use. Some of the ideas that I'll share are more, you know, because I think people will enjoy it. People will perform with it. But I also love performing the ideas that I come up with, because, you know, it's yours and it feels very, very, there's a lot of satisfaction in that. But I think that creating magic, it gives me comfort. It gives me satisfaction. It's a way that I can focus my creativity on one thing and put the best work that I can into it. So I'll say that's probably the answer.
That's great. And when did you publish your first trick? When was your first trick published? And what was it?
So we're not including a free download on The Wire, I guess.
Hey, well, you know, The Wire was a great one. A lot of people started by putting stuff on The Wire. But obviously,
I think seriously talking, Inverto is really my first release to the magic world, as a product that is sold worldwide. I had some other things working, but Inverto was the first one that was out there to the public. And nowadays, I'm also working on. So right now, there are three projects with three different companies that are all coming hopefully this year, which are different projects that I'm really excited about, each and every single one of them. Going to be amazing. I'll have to show you some stuff if you want.
Yes, I want to see some. But before I do, I want to talk about the projects that you've got coming up, and I'd love to see anything that you can show me. But first of all, Inverto, incredible trick. I gave it like an amazing review.
Oh, thank you.
Really, really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I saw. I appreciate it.
It's a great trick. Wonderful, wonderful trick. So one question that I get on this channel all the time is from new creators, people that have an idea, and they think that it's the best idea in the world, and it's ready to be marketed, and they need to put it out through a company. And they say to me, what's the best advice to actually get a company to get on board with you? As somebody who's not really released a product before. Now, to be clear, Inverto, your first big product, really sold well, has done amazing. Everyone's raving about it. And you released it with the world's largest magic shop. It's not like you've it's kind of like, look at that. I mean, it's like Penguin Magic are a big deal. Getting to work with Penguin Magic, that's a big deal. And that's the first release. So how did that come about? Was it a case of just ringing up Penguin and saying, hey, I've got something, and they said yes? Or was it a case of throwing it out to everybody? Did you have Penguin in mind when you released it? Like, Where did this come from? And what advice can you give people that are in a similar situation to you when you had Inverto and you knew it was good and you wanted to get it out there? What advice would you give somebody?
So I would say definitely if you can, try to socialize with the people that work in those industries. If you can, go to Magic conventions, go to the Blackpool Magic Convention, go to Magic Live, wherever you're at. Try to socialize with the people that actually have the jobs in those companies that can move things forward, because it helps tremendously. Because you have to understand that those people get hundreds of emails and messages, and even if your trick is amazing, sometimes they'll just miss it because you know, there's too many. So I'll say trying to socialize, because that's what I did. I love Blackpool. I go to Blackpool every year now. I think this year was my sixth time there or something like that. I love Blackpool. And I remember showing Inverto to people from different companies, and a few people told me it's not for us. Some people told me, you know, not for us. And I was, you know, I was a little bit, of course, I was a little bit like disappointed, but you know, you have to understand, maybe I didn't present it in the best light possibly. And maybe it was just bad timing showing it to them. There could be 100 reasons, but what I did is I didn't stop. So after I showed it to a few people and didn't get any responses, I kept on doing it for magicians. Every time that I got to meet a magician, I showed it to him. And I think I showed it to Tobias Dostel when he was in Israel. We hosted him for a lecture. And I showed it to him, and I kind of uploaded a story of his reaction. Because with Inverto, for people who don't know, you get a video of their reaction to the trick. So, and he had a really crazy reaction. You know, he had a big surprise and he loved it. And when I uploaded it, I was approached by a few companies just from that story, just from that reaction. And I think, if I remember it correctly, one of them was Penguin. And from there on, you know, they wanted to produce it. I also showed them some other things, and we ended up also producing those tricks, which are coming up. But that's how I started getting into it. And just socializing with those people and being nice. And also, like, I know that's a topic that you touched on in one of your videos, but when you're already in the stage that you're working with the company, it's also very important to be easy to work with, to be professional, to remember that you're only one artist with a company that works with many artists, and that you have to not be a diva. You have to like be easy to work with, so they'll want to keep working with you because it's a relationship. And also another path that you can take, which is not the one that I took, is to try to release something by just getting your name out there and creating a community, posting videos online. If you post a really good trick to Instagram, eventually a company will see it and they have the motivation and the reasons to reach out to you, yeah, and to want to produce your trick because it's their job and they're making money out of it. So if you share your ideas with the world or with other magicians, eventually, if they're good, it will happen.
Great advice. Absolutely amazing. And really great advice. And so now you're in a situation where you say you've got 3 projects coming out this year. Are they? I know you've just come back from Penguin Magic. So, is this some of the stuff that you shot over there? What can you tell us? What can you tell us, Liam, about things that are coming next from you?
All right. So, I have a few things that I can tell you about. But so, the thing that I shot with Penguin is a trick that I created a long time ago, and I really love it. It's called Ishihara test. And I don't know if you've heard about Ishihara test, but Ishihara test is a colorblind test. It's a way to check if somebody's colorblind or not. And it's a packet trick that is basically based on that test. So you're testing if somebody's colorblind or not. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a self-working trick. There's almost zero sleight of hand. It instant resets, and you can just carry it on you. It's this thick without showing too much. And I don't know if I'm allowed to perform it or not. I mean, can I show it to you? And then after the interview, we check with Sean if it's okay to put it on or not.
I mean, I think that'll be okay. What we'll do is you perform it for me now. And anybody who's watching this interview, if you don't see a performance, blame Penguin Magic, because it means that they're not letting Liam perform this. Evil Penguin Magic. Evil Penguin Magic. No. That is killer. That is really killer. I always like... I love packet tricks. I'm a packet trick obsessive. Love packet tricks, but I've always liked packet tricks where they're framed as kind of some sort of test. Like, one of my favorite packet tricks is Nicholas Mavresis's and David Jonathan Stroop test, because
it's
kind of an interesting premise. Hey, I'm going to give you a test.
It's amazing. Yeah.
This is the same sort of thing. This is, you know, they don't even realize they're seeing a magic trick until the magic happens. And at that point, there's nothing to backtrack. That's great, man. I want that.
Thanks.
Now. I need that in my life. That's so good.
I'll make sure you get one.
The hook. Hey, do you know if you're colorblind or not? I've got a friend called Aries, who's in Canada, and he's actually colorblind, and he wears it like he calls himself the colorblind magician. He would eat that up. Love that.
The only downside when you do it when you're a colorblind person is that you can confuse the orientation of the numbers, which happens to me all the time. But as I do it, people tell me that's upside down. And I'm like, oh, sorry. Because I really can't tell the numbers from each other. And it was when I was creating this trick, when I just created it, I had to ask my friends, which number is this one? Because, you know, because I can't tell. And it's the reason that I came up with it, because I love the whole concept of, you know, some people can see different colors from each other. And it's a really good hook, like you said, when you show it to people, and you will see that in the demo and in the live performances that we did. We did a lot of live performances when I was in Penguin. People get so into it, like when you ask them, did you ever take the test if you're colorblind or not? And every once in a while, someone will find out they're colorblind. Because I don't know if you know the statistics or not, but 1 out of 12 men are colorblind.
Did not know that.
How many views does this usually get?
Oh, thousands, thousands, thousands. The talk magic.
Thousands. So, statistically, around 200 people watching this video will just find out they're colorblind.
Wow. Damn, that's great, man. What a great hook. So that's coming out with Pet. You've shot that, you've filmed that, you've done the tutorial.
Yeah.
So
I don't know when it's coming up. Hopefully in the next few months. We're just waiting for that. Another thing that is coming up, and I know that I can show it to you because I already asked permission, is something that I filmed with the guys over at Alakazam.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of my Alaka fam, but I'm very, very good friends with Peter Nardi, and
So we actually filmed the entire thing in Blackpool, the performances and the tutorial. We filmed everything in Blackpool, and we wanted to show it to you as part of the trailer, I think, but I think we couldn't find you, or you're probably passed out in a corner or something.
Well, Ryland was in the Family Entertainer of the Year at Blackpool this year, so Ryland most of my time. I would have loved to have been on that trailer. I'm so sorry.
No, but it's a good thing because I can show it to you now.
Yeah, I want to see it. I've never even heard of it.
Great. So I'll show you this one. This is a card trick. But it's a really interesting card trick. So, and I can do it like that. So the idea is, in a minute I'll show you the deck, but how good is your memory?
Pretty good, actually.
Pretty good? All right. So I'll show you the deck, and I want you to try to remember as many things as you see. Okay? As many things as you can. I'll spread through the cards and just try to really pick up on everything. Okay? I'll go pretty slow. So just try to remember everything that you see. Now, from what you just saw, what do you remember seeing?
Well, I remember seeing a card that was reversed in the deck. There was a card.
That's good. Middle. Yeah, you picked up on that. That's
there was
really
four
good.
Four hearts on the top, then a six of spades, then an eight of hearts.
Oh, you got a really good memory. Really good.
Two clubs at the bottom, I think. Yeah, I remember a few things, but
all right.
Not.
All right. I want to keep that memory fresh in your head. So I'm going to ask you some questions. And when you answer, don't think about it too much. Try to just answer from you within your unconscious, just whatever comes up, okay? From what you just saw, you remember seeing less picture cards or less number cards?
Less picture cards. I think there were more number cards there than picture cards.
Okay. It makes sense because you also probably you saw less picture cards because there are less picture cards. But you remember mostly the numbers, you remember less the pictures.
I remember mostly numbers.
So from those that you remember less, if you had to say you remember less seeing jacks, queens, or kings, try to remember.
The jacks, I think.
Jacks. And from the jacks, which one are you 100% sure that you haven't seen?
Spades. Jack of spades.
Jack of spades. So from all the deck of cards that you just saw, the only one card that you are 100% sure you didn't see is the Jack of spades.
Yes.
True?
Yes.
And I've been holding the cards like that the entire time.
Yes.
In your, you could see them. And when I was spreading, you did see some number cards, yeah, and some picture cards. And you also noticed there was one card facing the other way around. Only
yes.
One. Now, the only card you don't remember seeing was the Jack of Spades. And that is exactly the one card that is reversed in the entire deck.
Look at that. That's great. Very, 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 very nice. Well,
and
that's awesome. It's like an invisible deck where you're showing the backs of the cards.
Well, not really, because the invisible deck, one of the best tricks in the world ever created, and it has a different function, I think. With this deck, which is a trick we're calling Total Recall, and is coming up with Alakazam. I don't know exactly when, but hopefully soon. This is mostly meant for that presentation. Everything around it is built for that presentation. That's the reason I created it in that way, because I first had the idea for the plot, where you see the entire deck and you only see one card reversed. And then out of memory, you can tell which one you didn't see. And that's the one reversed in the middle. So that's how I came up with it. But you cannot do it in the same way that you do Invisible Deck, because Invisible Deck has some features that this does not have, you know, naming any card at all. But this have features that Invisible Deck doesn't have, because here you see 51 cards.
Yeah,
and
I
you
love
can
that you see
the
that
backs.
Card reversed right at the very beginning. Again, one common thread that I see with a lot of your magic and a lot of your presentations is it's a really interesting hook. It's a really interesting premise. And it's not just a trick done for trick's sake. You know, you saw that with Inverto, the concept of inverting an image. And you know, that this, it's such a... And that comes from, I think, you performing an awful lot in that you understand that you have to grab their attention right at the very beginning, and having that hook line, you know, is an important way to do that. It's brilliant, mate. Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I love this trick. I do it a lot. I love to do it to magicians. I love to do it to people. It's a more of a conversation trick. Like, you have to be in a moment that people can hear you well, to understand what you're saying, to be invested in the process. But once you're done with it, it gets a really strong reaction, because they think, they believe that they did it. They were the ones to actually, you didn't do anything. They just named the right card, you know, which is great. I love empowering them and giving them that moment, you know, because magic is always so self-centered anyway, that it's nice to be able to give someone the spotlight. And this one is 100% self-working. You don't need to do anything at all. There's no sleight of hand. The gimmick does everything for you. Also, an instant reset, because you don't need to do anything. There's no changing of the cards. If you can spread a deck like I just did, that's all you need to do.
That's amazing.
So the other one that is coming up with Vanishing Ink. And this one,
well, working with Vanishing Ink is a very big deal.
I love Josh so much. We had a blast. He stayed with me when he came to Israel, and he's such a great magician and a great person. And this project is something that I really worked hard on for the last few years. And it's a mentalism trick. It's more of a utility device. And this one, I'm not sure how much I can disclose about, but
we'll tell you. Generally, as a rule, more than any other company, Vanishing Ink like to play their cards very close to their chest.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah. It's probably not a good idea to say too much about it, but I mean, Vanishing Ink, they're one of the biggest. That's right. Okay. I mean, that's insane. Your first three releases are with three of the biggest magic companies in the world. You know, you got Penguin Magic, you got Vanishing Ink, and you've got Alakazam. All you need is Illusionist and Murphys, and then you've got the Golden Fire. Like, I mean, it's insane that you've literally, I don't want to say come out of nowhere, because you haven't, because you've been active on the scene for a long time, but it's kind of interesting.
No, but it's true. I did come up from nowhere, because I didn't have any releases really, except from, I'm just thinking about when I worked with Cobra Magic, I released an app together with Yaniv, who's the founder of Cobra Magic, but I was working at the company, so it wasn't my idea, it wasn't my creation. I was just helping to get it out there. But yeah, I think Inverto was really the first one, and I did come out of nowhere in a sense that, you know, people don't know who I am, and I'm happy to get, you know, people to like my tricks, and to that people give positive feedback, and I hope it stays like that. And I hope that people actually use the things that I come up with and spread magic, you know.
Absolutely. Man, it's just incredible. So, which brings me to, I've got one more question for you. Mm-hmm. You're seeing unparalleled success as a creator. Very few people have this much of an impact very early on in their journey, which is just amazing. What have you got left that you want to achieve? So I can tell you very ambitious. I can tell you very goal-driven. What is left on your magical bucket list? What would you like to do, both as a creator, but also as a performer? What goals do you have that you can share with us over the coming weeks, months, and years that you would like to see come to fruition?
I feel that I'm just at the beginning, you know. There's so many things that I want to do that I haven't done yet. I'm just starting out, so there's so many things. I definitely want to lecture. I want to write a lecture that I can do in conventions around the world. I love traveling for magic. Every time I visit anywhere, the first thing that I check is for magic shops and for magic clubs and, you know, things like that. That's the thing for me, is traveling around and, you know, meeting magicians, getting to know them. So 100% doing a lecture is something that I have my mind on. I also would love to perform at some venues in the States. I'd love to perform at the Magic Castle. I'd love to perform in the Chicago Magic Lounge and, you know, other places that are like magic arenas that are really, I always looked up to. I'd love to just keep on creating magic and to spread it around and to see people using it. And also in my own career, like the more I perform, the more, the better I get. And I hope to get successful enough that, you know, financially, that's all the support that I need to support myself and my family and to, yeah, to just to keep on doing hopefully good magic.
Wow, you really are, Liam, and I'm not just saying this, you really are an inspiration. You are. I mean, what you've achieved. No, seriously, you are. What you've achieved, and you're also such a nice person as well. Everyone I've spoken to is like, oh, Liam is a great guy. I'm very good friends with Sean Dunn. Sean said they had an amazing experience with you. Peter Nardi's been
Man,
great about
I love
you.
Sean.
Everybody that I've spoken to has nothing but nice things to say about you, which is rare in this industry, you know? So not only are you doing it, not only are you making it happen, but you're doing it and your reputation is just through the roof, which is great. It really is.
Ah, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time and, you know, speaking to me. And I love everything you do. You know, I love the tricks you create. And thank you, you know. Just
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. I'm a big fan of yours as well. And this has been a super fun interview. It really has. And I'm going to wrap it up, but I'm going to ask you one last question and then I'm going to wrap it up. And the last question, for the people that are watching this, if you could give them one piece of advice about anything to do with magic, it could be creating, performing, I don't know, whatever, business, whatever you want. One thing, what would that one piece of advice be?
I think probably to go easy on yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the number one advice that I can think about. Trying to compare yourself to others usually leads to the wrong path. And magic is just meant for you to enjoy it and to have fun. And whatever way that you find comfortable to do it, it's probably the right way for you. And it is important to challenge yourself and to push yourself forward. But if someone's doing something a certain way, there's 100 million ways to do it. So, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. That's probably the best thing I can think about.
That's really, really good advice. And I've never heard anyone give that advice before. That's great. I just realized I made a note earlier on. There's one other question I want to ask before I wrap it
up. Yeah, sure.
Should have asked it earlier on, but I've just looked at my notes as you were speaking, I was making notes. Several times in the interview, you've talked about learning magic on YouTube. And now more than ever, there's a big debate going on within the magic community, mainly online, on Facebook and various different places like
yeah.
that, which is, oh, you should, you know, people should not be allowed to teach magic on YouTube because it's devaluing the art and, you know, we're opening the doors to people finding out all of our secrets. And, you know, the first rule of being a magician is never expose, and it's a exposure. My attitude has always been, and if you've watched anything on this channel, you'll know that, like, YouTube is basically the biggest library in the world. And I learned how to do magic going to a library and taking out books. Some of the best magicians in the world these days started off by learning magic on YouTube and having videos on there. As long as you're not like giving away how to do Inverto or something like that, you know, I think it brings more people into magic, which is good for a whole bunch of reasons, but I'd like to know, as somebody who's actually got into magic through YouTube initially, what's your viewpoint on this debate that everyone's talking about at the moment?
So I think we need to separate a little bit between exposure and learning and teaching magic. As I pretty much agree with what you said, I think if we're talking about exposure of gimmicks or things that are not open source, things that are like specific products or ideas that are more secret, that will actually hurt a lot of performers and a lot of creators, obviously I think that's wrong, especially if somebody's doing that just to get some views. But for people that are actually passionate about teaching, like yourself, or people that do a good job with it, I don't see why it's wrong, because like you said, I remember you said it on a few of your videos, if someone's spending 30 minutes, 40 minutes watching a tutorial for a top change, then probably they're pretty already invested in magic, and it's not going to hurt anyone, you know? It's just a gateway for them. And once they get past that gateway of learning a few techniques and a few ideas, then they'll start buying books, buying products, taking private lessons, performing, you know? But it's important to understand that things have changed a little bit, and the gateway nowadays could also be TikTok, could also be shorts, you know, but of course we have to take into consideration that when we teach something, we can't just teach whatever we have lying on the shelf and, you know, this will probably get a bunch of views and show that gimmick, because people worked hard on that gimmick, and you know, by exposing it, you have felt the effects of it. I felt the effects of it when you do a trick. I did a Rubik's Cube trick and somebody was like, oh, I've seen this one on TikTok. It's the cube that folds, you know, and even if it's not exactly what you're using, doesn't matter. You know, it just immediately brings down everything. So as a performer, you have to learn to work with that. You have to adjust yourself to what is currently exposed or not. And it would be easier if those things were not exposed. But also, it's hard to say, because so many people, kids, you know, will get interested in magic just because of those videos. So I think it's the fine line. It's a gray area. It's hard to judge. I don't have a very clear opinion. It's a hard question. Good question.
Yeah. I'm just interested in your take, but I agree with what you said 100%. But yeah, Liam, the interview is over. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. Where can people follow you?
Thank you. That
are watching this, where can they follow you?
So you can follow me on Instagram at Liam Levanon. That's where I'm very active. I also just opened up a second account that is meant for magicians only, and I try to post their tutorials talking about magic exposure, but this is a private account, so only people that are magicians I allow to follow there, but everyone who's watching this video, it's called Fresh Magic Lab, and you can go there and I'll accept you as a follower, so you can learn some of my ideas, some sleight of hand, some gimmicks. I hope to upload there more. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Fantastic. Liam, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. I cannot wait to get my hands on the things that you've got coming out. And I know you talked about are going to be the start of a massive flood of places. And I know that the quality is going to be there, because I know that you care about your product, you care about the people that are buying it, and you care about magic. I can tell that just from speaking to you. So congratulations to all your success.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for coming on the channel. Thank you so much, buddy.
Thank you, Craig.
I want everyone that's watching this to do me a favor, though. First of all, leave a comment down below. Let Liam know what you thought of the interview. Second of all, if you haven't picked up Inverto, hello, McFly, go and get it right now. Go and get Inverto. It is incredible. You will be doing it again and again and again. While you're at it, get some refill packs because it's that good. And then make sure you follow Liam on every social media channel because he's going to be coming up with some amazing stuff over the next 12 months. And I will be back next Saturday with another Talk Magic. But on behalf of Liam Levenon, my name's Craig Petty. This is Magic TV. Liam, one last time, thank you so much.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.